Greetings once again, America. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview. Welcome to theweeklyworldview.com. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome to the show, where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do take the news of the week and focus it through the lens of original thought. What is the deal with homework? Yeah, you know, I've wanted to use that line ever since I saw that Seinfeld episode where he does his bit in front of a junior high school assembly. But seriously, folks, I'm not a comedian. But what is the deal with homework? I was at the karate dojo last week, picking up my daughter, Nicole, 7:30 in the evening. That's right, the karate dojo. Nicole is a blue belt. If you mess with her, she'll reach through your chest and rip out your beating heart, and you'll watch the blood drip down between her fingers as the life drains out of your body. So don't mess with Nicole. But I'm at the dojo. It's 7:30 in the evening, and I'm picking her up to take her home so that we can have an enjoyable evening of family time together. And one of the fathers there is hustling out his young son, probably, 7 years old, maybe 8 years old. And he's saying, son, hurry up, grab your stuff. We got to get home. You've got your homework to do. And then it's bedtime, and bedtime never changes. We got to get home and do your homework. And I thought to myself, I feel so sorry for this poor young lad, this public school product who has to go home. Now, let's say he makes it home at 7:45. Now he's got to do his homework, and then it's off to bed. And where's the family time for this poor, poor youth? I just don't know. And I thought to myself, I was pondering the whole theory of homework, which brings to mind the whole theory of the public school factory system that parents ignorantly put their children in. And I thought, what could my kid possibly need to learn in any given day that you can't teach her in 6 hours at the public school factory? I mean, what do you people do all day for crying out loud that you got to send the kid home with homework at the end of the day? And I began to ponder what it is that the public school factory system has evolved into. And I'm certain it was a beautiful idea, undertaken by good-hearted people with good intentions 150, 200, 250 years ago. I'm not sure how long ago. It started a long time ago. Good Christian people became aware of the fact that a lot of youngsters were not getting a proper education. They're out there working on the farm all day. So they started the public school system to ensure that every child got an education. But what it has evolved into, ladies and gentlemen, is a godless means for the government to separate you from your child and to associate your child with the pop culture, the pagan, heathen pop culture. So for 6 hours a day, your kid's at school being fed a godless, hedonistic, anti-Bible, anti-truth, anti-religion, quote-unquote education, more like a social indoctrination, for 6 hours a day. And then the teacher realizes we're going to have to teach this kid something, reading, writing, arithmetic, things like that. So when do they teach the kid that? Well, they don't. They send the kid home with homework so that you don't have much time to spend with your kid to bring your kid up the way that I hope you want your kid to be brought up, to be honest, to care about the truth, to have a knowledge of the creation and the creator, and the living God of the universe. I mean, that's what homework to me has become. Yet another wedge between parents and their children. And the pop culture is that as well. Your children spend all day with other kids their age who are being fed through the television, through the internet, through their iPods, with all the garbage from the pop culture. And then they come home and do, I don't know, a half hour, hour and a half of reading, writing, and arithmetic. You get them finally off the bed. You got to wake them up at 6:30 so they can go back to the public school factory and fall asleep during their first period class. So if you're sending your kids to the public school factory, you are sinning against your child and against God. Now, I think I said that in last week's show. I'll probably say it in every week's show. Now, we homeschool our kids, and it's an ongoing, never-ending, it's a joy, because we don't spend 6 hours a day trying to figure out exactly what to teach them about the culture and society and how they should think politically. We spend as much time as we feel we need during the day to teach them the appropriate reading, writing, arithmetic, history, language, and all manner of things that we teach our children. And we're not killing ourselves. It's not as hard as you might think. So if you're pondering it, I mean, look at the alternative. Take a shot, okay? It's not that difficult, and you'll have a good time, and you'll actually learn something. But let's move on. We've got an awful lot of news to get to this week, because last week I realized I ended up with this huge pile of news that I didn't get to go through because I've only got about an hour. And why do I only have about an hour? Well, it's because I have a life, and I have a wife and children. I have other things to do, but the worldview is something I need to share with you every week. But I have to limit myself to just an hour because, you know, moderation in all things is good. So we've only got about an hour. I better get right to it. I want to start off with our good friends over at CNN. Now, at our home, we like our liberal news straight from the bottle. I mean the hard stuff. So we have CNN. We don't like our news gilded by a thin facade of so-called conservatism. So we don't allow Fox News into the house. And another reason is because that's not part of the basic package. And since the only reason we have cable is so my wife can watch the Food Network, there's no way I'm paying for news. And have you noticed the commercials on Fox News? And the news in general just tends to be borderline pornographic, at least icky. Anyway, so we don't have Fox. We have CNN, the straight, hardcore liberal news. And I just pulled this off the wire. This is from... let's see here. I believe I pulled this off Yahoo News. CNN's March ratings are not so good right now. More evidence, they say, that CNN is going to have to find a new strategy fast or risk becoming a cable news also-ran. In the month of March, so far, the Time Warner-owned network has come in fourth place in primetime among adults 25 to 54, which, as we all know, is the key demographic for advertisers. So CNN is at the back of the pack. And one of the reasons is, number one, that Fox News has bamboozled a lot of people into thinking that they're getting something like conservative news. That's a big part of it. But another part is just the fact that their integrity is lacking. Case in point, there was an interview between Dr. Sanjay Gupta and former President Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton. And they reran this thing so many times that if you were just scanning through the channels at any time in the last 10 days, there was a good chance you were going to see Bubba Bill Jeff up there sitting across, smiling and mugging it up with Sanjay Gupta. Now, Sanjay Gupta claims to be a medical doctor, and I don't doubt that he is. He also claims to be a neurosurgeon, which separates him from the average medical doctor in that he's fairly specialized and must be really smart and must be some kind of fantastic doctor. In fact, Our new president actually considered him to be the Surgeon General. Can you believe that? A TV doctor is considered by the Obama administration to be the next Surgeon General. Anyway, he turned it down probably because there's more money in bogus news than there is in working for the government. I'm not sure what that's all about. But Sanjay sat down with Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton, and they were discussing embryonic stem cell research. And I had to stop because it's like a car accident. You know, you see Sanjay Gupta sitting across from Bill Clinton, and you just know if you watch long enough, something's going to happen, and you're going to be horrified and disgusted, but you're going to be glad you watched it, and then you're going to turn the channel really quick. Well, Sanjay asked Bill Clinton about the new administration's new tactic, reversing George W. Bush's half-hearted effort to stem cell research. I guess I shouldn't say it that way. Anyway, we all know what George W. Bush did. He basically said, look, the kids we've already killed and chopped up and started experimenting on, we're going to go ahead and continue that. But we're just not going to do it with any new. We're not going to kill and chop up and experiment on any other new kids. And everyone thought that was really Solomon-esque when actually it was anything but that. It was more It was just more of the same from George W. Bush. Half-hearted, semi-conservative effort that brought... Okay, I put out the call for names that I could call our new president because I have a hard time saying President Barack Obama. I got some fairly good suggestions, but I've settled on... I think I'm just going to call him Barry Ho. Okay, because now his name is Barack Obama. But he went by Barry all his growing up, you know, so he back in grade school and whatnot, so the kids wouldn't make fun of him and throw things at him. Instead of going by Barack Hussein Obama, he went by Barry. So I think we're going to stick with Barry, and we're going to call him Barry Ho. That way we acknowledge the second two initials, Barack Hussein Obama. Instead of Hussein Obama, we'll just say Ho, because, well, it accomplishes a couple of things. First, it acknowledges his Hawaiian background, and also it's very ethnically correct, Barry Ho, because that fits in with the whole first black president thing that he's got going on. So we're going to call him Barry Ho because it's easier for me. But now I've gotten sidetracked here. I didn't want to talk about Barry Ho. I wanted to talk about what Barry Ho is doing with stem cell research. And Sanjay Gupta's interview of former President Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton, and Sanjay said to him, "Do you support the president's new policy on embryonic stem cell research?" And Bubba Bill Jeff said, "You know, Sanjay, yeah, I think it's good. I think it's great, man. You know what? We're not going to mess with any embryos that could become fertilized and have a chance at life, Sanjay, so that's why it's so good." Now, Sanjay Gupta, a neurosurgeon, a medical doctor, I assume that he's credentialed, he just let that go and continued with, asking the president about his boxers or briefs or something. I don't know. I turned the channel at that point. That was that point, that car accident point where I had to turn the channel or get sick. And Sanjay just let it go, and I just wanted to remind Bubba Bill Jeff. Now, Bubba Bill Jeff, I know that you have dealt with pregnancies in the past. There's Chelsea, so we know you've dealt with at least one, and my guess is you've dealt with maybe more than that, maybe more than just one. But Bubba Bill Jeff, an embryo, by definition, cannot become fertilized and stand a chance at life. An embryo is fertilized. It is alive, okay? And Sanjay, candidate for the Scourgeon General of the United States, how do you let that go? How do you, as a medical doctor, look a man in the face and have him say something that ignorant and that misleading, that stupid, and not at least point out, well, Mr. President, I just want to remind you that we're talking about embryos here and they're already fertilized. And some would contend that to chop them up and experiment on them is destructive, dangerous, and maybe even downright ghoulish. Now, what is your opinion on that, Bubba Bill? Well, Sanjay, you know, man. We all got opinions on this kind of stuff, man. But what I'd like to talk about is my foundation. Anyway, we're gonna set that aside. So that's CNN. If you want the straight, hardcore, liberal garbage, go for CNN, okay? All right, now I'm gonna test my extremely attractive audio engineer's bumping capabilities to see if she can pick the bumper that I would pick after going through these two stories. This is the most important story of the week, in my opinion. The New Mexico governor, Governor Bill Richardson, has abolished capital punishment in the state of New Mexico. That's right, he signed legislation this past week to repeal New Mexico's death penalty, calling it, quote, the most difficult decision of my political life. That's what he said. And he said, regardless, this is Bill Richardson, former candidate for president and suck-up to both Clintons, but even more of a suck-up to Barry Ho. He says, regardless of my personal opinion about the death penalty, I do not have confidence in the criminal justice system as it currently operates to be the final arbiter of when it comes to who lives and who dies for their crime. And, you know, I agree with that statement that myself, Doug McBurney, host of the Weekly Worldview, do not have confidence in the criminal justice system as it currently operates. But Bill, the solution is not to eradicate the best means and method we have possible for preventing crime and bringing criminals either to reject the idea of committing their crime or to repentance after they've committed their crime. That's the death penalty. That's what it does. It prevents criminals from committing crimes, and then those criminals who have committed capital crimes, when faced with the death penalty, it is our justice system's best tool toward bringing them to repentance so that they might be forgiven of their crime, forgiven of their sin by the living God of the universe. And I think that might be Bill Richardson's problem, is that he has no concept of the living God of the universe. He has no concept of Judgment Day. He has no concept of repentance. And he doesn't realize that it's the justice system that he is lost confidence in is not the final arbiter of anything. It's the living God of the universe. It's the judgment day that we all will stand and face that is the final arbiter. The death penalty is merely a tool that the justice system uses to, as I said, prevent crime and to bring criminals to repentance. And New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson has now eliminated the most effective tool that the criminal justice system there in New Mexico has. Now, down as I read through this Associated Press story, there's a note that all European nations have banned or suspended capital punishment. All of them. Yeah. And that's not really surprising, but is that anything we want to emulate? Do we really want to go the way of Europe? Well, Governor Richardson says he struggled with the decision, and he made the decision after going to the penitentiary where he saw the death chamber, and he visited the maximum security unit where those sentenced to life without parole could be housed. And he said that his conclusion was that those cells in the maximum security unit are something that may be worse than death, said New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson. He's convinced that life in prison in one of these cells in the maximum security unit is worse than death. Well, first of all, he has no concept of what could be worse than death because he's never died, he's never gone and seen how bad it can be when you're sentenced to hell on the other side. And so it's pretty presumptuous of him. And also, you know, the Bible teaches us that the worst punishment that the government is authorized to inflict upon a criminal is the death penalty. It tells us that it's effective, and it also tells us that this is the ultimate punishment to be reserved for those few capital crimes that occur. So for Bill Richardson to say that he wants to punish a criminal with a punishment that is worse than death means that he is putting himself in the place of God and assuming that he has the right to do that. And that is simply not true, Mr. Richardson, because you're just a man. And not a very bright one at that. And now, he says it's worse than death. Well, I was scanning the internet this week, and I came across a photo of an older gentleman, looked fairly happy, well-fed, had a pretty decent complexion, didn't look like he was suffering or being tortured in anything like the hell that's described in the Bible, the hell that awaits those unrepentant souls that die at the hand of a just government via the death penalty. He looked pretty happy and pudgy and like he was doing okay. And guess who it was, ladies and gentlemen? It was Charles Manson! That's right, Charles Manson's still alive. He's 74 years old. His picture was on the internet this week. I've got a story from Reuters. The photograph of the 74-year-old cult leader was taken recently at Corcoran State Prison, where he is serving a life sentence. Yeah, California corrections officials, they released this photo on the internet. They say they do this quite often. Well, folks, the photo was, you know, he looks like Grandpa with a receding hairline. The swastika on his forehead has faded out to where it's almost gone, one of those prison tattoo deals. And he's got a heavy gray beard, kind of like Santa Claus. I mean, the guy just doesn't look like he's in a place that's worse than death. So Bill Richardson, please, please, Mr. Richardson, have mercy on us. We don't want to see another murderer sitting in prison for 40 some odd years, getting fat, happy, and healthy, not only at the expense of the taxpayers, but at the expense of your broken justice system. It is the Weekly Worldview, ladies and gentlemen, and it's so good to be with you. So good to have you along for another week. And if only Mr. Manson was indeed on a highway to hell. And the thing about Charles Manson is, I don't necessarily want him to go to hell, but if he knew that in a day or two or three at the most, that he was going to be executed, there's a good chance that he would repent. Well, okay, it's Charles Manson. Maybe that's not the best example. But we have a great example from the scriptures, because Jesus Christ was put to death with a murderer on his left and a murderer on his right, all three facing imminent death, Jesus Christ not needing to repent, him being the Lord and creator of the universe. They're dying for our sins. But the two murderers, one on his left and one on his right, they were in need of repentance. And 50% of that group repented. So those are pretty good odds. All right, now I'm going to move through this quickly because there is a lot of news here. I read an interview from Der Spiegel, which is a German magazine, and apparently the leading German magazine, if you can imagine that. This is the Worldview. We go worldwide, and isn't it interesting how the global community has shrunk so that news sources that once were only available to Germans and folks like that over across the pond in Europe are now available to us? This was an interview in Der Spiegel with Janet Napolitano. Is anyone familiar with this person? Okay, now this is allegedly a female person, but I demand a DNA test. Because, anyway, that's all I'm going to say. I demand a DNA test. I'm not buying it until I see specific evidence in the DNA that this is a female person. Anyway, Der Spiegel is interviewing Madam Secretary. She is now the Secretary of Homeland Security. Janet Napolitano, a liberal, just a liberal empty skirt, if I may borrow a phrase from Michael Savage, an empty skirt. I tried to think of a better phrase, and you know what? I just can't. I mean, that says it all. She's an empty skirt. She's now the Department of Homeland Security Secretary, as scary as that is. Der Spiegel asks her, Madam Secretary, in your first testimony to the U.S. Congress as Homeland Security Secretary, you never mentioned the word terrorism. Does Islamic terrorism suddenly no longer pose a threat to your country? And Napolitano answered, of course it does. I presume there is always a threat from terrorism. In my speech, although I did not use the word terrorism, I referred to man-caused disasters. Did you hear that, folks? Man-caused disasters. She says, that is perhaps only a nuance, but it demonstrates that we want to move away from the politics of fear. Well, Mr. Napolitano, it doesn't demonstrate that at all. It demonstrates that you are a moron. First of all, there is not a threat from terrorism. There is a threat from terrorists and terrorist states. There is not a threat from terrorism, this amorphous concept of terrorism blowing something up. Mr. Napolitano, there's a threat from terrorists and terrorist states. And the fact that Mr. Napolitano wants to, quote, move away from the politics of fear tells me that he just doesn't know what to be scared of. Because Mr. Napolitano, I'm scared of terrorists. I'm not scared of terrorism. I'm scared of terrorists and terrorist states. And the fact that that you no longer want to associate the threats against our country with terrorists and terrorist states and those that sponsor terrorism, you know, states like Iran, states like Syria, states like Russia, if I might be so bold, just tells me that we don't need this guy as the head of Homeland Security. In fact, maybe Homeland Security is just... maybe the time for the Homeland Security Department is past, frankly. I'm sure this lady would do a fine job running a wig shop somewhere, you know? Or working as a receptionist at a plastic surgeon's office who specializes in sex change operations. I'm sure she'd be great for that. But please, Homeland Security Secretary, give me a break. All right, now on from the politics of fear, policies of fear, what did she call it? The politics of fear. Speaking of the politics of fear, I want to talk, let's go back to embryonic stem cell research just for a moment. I know that it's an unpopular subject, especially if you're a squishy in the middle kind of person and you don't want to restrict anyone else's rights to do whatever they want, and this makes you uncomfortable, and you might turn off the show because I'm going to go back to something that makes you uncomfortable. But here's where it is, folks. Dateline Atlanta from the Associated Press. A showdown is shaping up in conservative states over embryonic stem cell research. Legislation granting fertilized embryos personhood has gained momentum in at least three state legislatures. The strategy, which has been used to try to undermine Roe versus Wade, is now aimed at embryonic stem cell research. Now, folks, the personhood movement is something that if you haven't heard about it, you better get on your horse and you better find out what's happening, because you don't want this movement to pass you by, because that would be like sitting around in 1838 and not realizing that there was a debate about slavery, okay? And you don't want to be in that position. You want to be educated. So my best advice to you is go to www.personhoodusa.com and find out what's happening, because this all started right here in Colorado. It all started here in Colorado, and just like the AP story says here, opposition to both abortion and stem cell research hinges on the same issue. When does life begin? What a question that is for anyone to ponder. I don't want to talk about the right of what you want to do with your body, okay? That's not an issue for discussion. I'm all for you doing whatever you want to your body, as long as it doesn't hurt me, as long as it doesn't offend the living God of the universe, and as long as it doesn't make people sick and disgusted. Janet Napolitano aside. But when does life begin? It's a pretty simple question, and it really crystallizes the entire debate, and I'm really excited that personhood started here in Colorado, because it's, speaking of the politics of fear, the folks in the abortion racket, the abortion industry, are afraid of this question. When does life begin? They are afraid of that question. And I look forward to a day, not only when personhood passes in at least one state, but the day when that question is put to a court of law before God and everyone in this country. When does life begin? I would love to see some of the most educated minds on both sides of the issue, both those who want to preserve life and those who want to authorize people, to kill the innocent, and to experiment on them, and to sell their body parts. I want both sides to have their day in court, because that will be the question. When does life begin? And that will be a date that all Americans can stand up together, prick up their ears, as they say in England, and pay attention, ladies and gentlemen, because when that day comes, then we will see if the other side is willing to be reasonable. Because the question of when life begins hinges not on religion, but on reason and science. And I look forward to that day. Now, the AP article says similar personhood measures have cleared one chamber each in Montana and North Dakota, and they come in the wake of a Colorado ballot initiative that said human life begins at fertilization. Which the AP notes here that failed to win voter approval last year. What they don't note is that nearly 600,000 Coloradans voted and said yes, that life does begin at fertilization. We are willing to accede to the reason of science and admit that life begins at fertilization. Almost 600,000 people in a liberal state voted yes. And there are a number of other states out there that we can work in, ladies and gentlemen. that are significantly more conservative than Colorado and who might be able to answer that question with an even louder voice and even win. I really hope we can win that one. A story from Reuters has come across my desk, and the headline says, U.S. teen birth rate is up. Now, we know that liberals don't like people, and they don't like babies especially. So they were, the way the folks at Reuters, which are, you know, a bunch of post-Christian Euro trash writing headlines and the news, they're alarmed that the U.S. teen birth rate is up. But if you read in the story, not only is the teen birth rate up for the second straight year, more babies, this is quoting from the Reuters article, more babies were born to all mothers than even at the peak of the baby boom after World War II. So folks on my side of the aisle, folks on my side of the life issue, take some encouragement from that. Because for a generation, we've been told that population is bad, it's a bomb, it's dangerous. Too many people will destroy the earth. And so our birth rates have declined, and we're barely replacing ourselves. And people are generally not having babies at the rate they did when, let's say, my grandparents got married. I mean, we all know that. I don't have to pull out a study. Look around at your friends and your neighbors. It's obvious, isn't it? People aren't having kids at the rate they used to. But you read this article and you think, wow, more babies were born to all mothers than even at the peak of the baby boom? That's good news. But wait, one must dig through the data to get to the real issue. Now, the article tells us that the total of 4.3 million babies born in 2007 was the most ever recorded in the United States. It seems encouraging to those of us who like babies, those of us who are even having babies, right? We're having babies, and we're going to have more babies. Talking to my very attractive audio engineer. Not only are we having babies, we're going to have more babies. But anyway, so folks like us, we would love to see the birth rate increase. Not only in our little world, but, you know, across the country. Well, listen to this, folks. The peak of the baby boom was 1957, and there were 4.3 million live births in the United States. Okay? 4.3 million. Now, the population of the United States in 1957 was 172 million. Well, in 2007, there were 4.3 million live births in the United States, but the population is over 301 million. So do the math, ladies and gentlemen, in your head, and you'll realize that the war declared against children has not abated. No, we're not winning. No, the population has nearly doubled, yet the birth rate has remained the same. So it's not really very encouraging. And when you start to read the data on the out-of-wedlock births, 71.6% of black babies are born out of wedlock. Ladies and gentlemen, over half of Hispanic babies are born out of wedlock. So we've got a lot to do in what people call the culture war. And I want to address that phrase, the culture war, right when we get back. But folks, this is a war on children. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I am Doug McBurney. And let's talk about this phrase, the culture war, which is a phrase that I'm not sure who came up with it, but I know that Bill O'Reilly loves the phrase, the culture war. And I'm willing to say that there's a war on children, but I'm not willing to say that folks like me and you are fighting a culture war. Because a war is something that you fight to the death, for which you leave hearth and home, and you leave whatever it is you do for a living, and you go willing to die, willing to kill or be killed in order to win the war. And we have not done that. We're doing what we can. But this is not a war. This is a cultural conflict. This is a social conflict in which we're engaged. But it does not rise to the level of a war. On the other hand, our enemies and their opinions of our children, their opinions of children in general, their willingness to devote their lives to the slaughter, to the killing of children, tells me that they're in a war indeed, because they are willing to kill. They're willing to kill or be killed. I mean, I've been down to the abortion clinic. It's surrounded by men with guns. Now that's a war, and people are dying. Now, when we study the scriptures, we learn that there's a principle of escalation of force, and there's a principle that citizens do not have the right to take up arms against their government in rebellion. So we must not call each other to war. We must not call each other to revolution or rebellion. But we must engage in the cultural conflict. And we must do as much as we can to prevent killing with tranquility in our nation. We must do it. So engage yourselves, ladies and gentlemen. Educate yourselves. Ask yourself the question, when does life begin? And when the issue of abortion comes up, steer the argument in that direction. Well, when does life begin? And you will be doing your part to battle in this cultural conflict. All right, now I want to move from that very serious issue to the economy, which I suppose it's serious, don't get me wrong. But the way things are going, it's like a three-ring circus out there, you know? It's just ridiculous. Listen to this. The CEO of General Motors from Detroit this week, Rick Wagoner, he says the automaker, General Motors, if we have to enter Chapter 11, he says, we're going to end up liquidating. It's going to be over. There'll be blood in the streets. It'll just all be over. You know, that's like well, I'm trying to think of an apt analogy. I mean, it's like the alcoholic, and you tell him that you're going to take his bottle away, and he says, well, if you do, I'm going to kill myself. It's just going to be horrible. You don't want to do that. I mean, don't tell me, Mr. Wagoner, that if General Motors enters bankruptcy, Chapter 11, that it's the end of the world and it's the end of General Motors. Come on. You can't tell me that there aren't some smart young businessmen who are a little bit more ethical and maybe a little bit more savvy than you and the morons who run your company, who wouldn't come in and buy your infrastructure for pennies on the dollar, pay off some of the suppliers that you've ripped off over the years, and put the thing back together. I know it would be ugly, but don't tell me it's the end of General Motors. Come on. Ladies and gentlemen, according to this article, General Motors has received over $13 billion dollars, and they're seeking another $16 billion. And Barry Ho and the boys have given them until March 31st to submit a viability plan. And I think Rick Wagner's going to submit the plan, and he's going to say, hey, Barry, as long as you keep giving us, $13, $15 every quarter, hey, we'll be viable, man. But don't force us into Chapter 11, man. Don't make me do it. Don't make me do it. All right, now this AIG thing, everyone's all upset, and it's a big news story. I think it's a complete distraction because, this is basically the story of how a bunch of fairly sharp businessmen took advantage of a number of fairly stupid politicians and basically got them to give them a bunch of money that they didn't deserve, that the politicians stole from you and I. The politicians stole the money from their constituents, and these sharp businessmen rooked them out of it. And then they start handing it out to the people in the company, and everybody gets upset. And the guys at AIG, they just need to sit down with Barney Frank and just say, look, Barney, we stole the money fair and square. You know, you can't tell us what to do with it. You already signed the deal with the devil. Now put your teeth back in and get back to work. Anyway, it's amazing. They hand out these bonuses to the AIG executives, and the Republicans and Democrats in the House of Representatives voted in a 90% tax on the bonuses. And where was Nancy Pelosi's? Oh, here it is. All right, these other stories, was there anything interesting in here? Oh, yeah. Now, Nancy Pelosi, she has the nerve to say, She has the nerve to say, after they passed this 90% tax on these fairly sharp, sly, crafty businessmen who ripped these ignorant politicians out of all these billions, she says, "We want our money back now for the taxpayers," says Nancy Pelosi. Does she expect us to buy that? That when the government taxes and gets all these bonuses back from these AIG guys, that she's going to give the money back to us? Come on, Nancy. I mean, we're not other congressmen you're dealing with. I mean, we know what's going on. You're going to tax these guys. You're going to take that money and you're going to give it to some other incompetent buffoons who are running some other failing company because you insist it can't fail. You know why the Congress insists that these companies can't fail? It's because these companies are full of people who donated massive amounts of money to their campaigns. That's the only reason it can't fail, Nancy. We will be okay if it fails. Even if it means that there's a significant economic correction that happens because these big companies fail. We know it's not going to be pretty, Nancy, but don't tell us it can't fail. And don't tell us you have to keep stealing our money and giving it to businessmen who don't know how to run their companies. And then don't have the audacity to take back a few pennies and say you're doing it for the taxpayers. Come on, Nancy. Let's see, what did Barry Ho have to say about this? He said, in the end, this is a symptom of a larger problem. A bubble and bust economy that valued reckless speculation over responsibility and hard work. That is what we must ultimately repair to build a lasting and widespread prosperity. All right, I'm getting there on it. Okay, I keep working on it. It's not that great yet, I admit it, but the guy's only been in office a few months. Give me some time on the impersonation. It'll come, okay? He's really a deadpan blank slate. I mean, there's nothing going on with the guy. I mean, at least with Bubba Bill Jeff, I mean, the guy had some character, okay? This guy's like, I don't know, the Manchurian candidate, just blank nothing. I mean, without a teleprompter, the guy doesn't even know what to say. So it's hard for folks like me to work up a decent impression of him. But now that line, folks, what Barry Ho just said there, that we need to ultimately repair a bubble and bust economy that valued reckless speculation over responsibility and hard work. What that means is he intends to destroy capitalism. And I don't like the term capitalism. A very wise man told me that capitalism is in the communist vernacular, and it's a pejorative. And what capitalism means is freedom. The freedom of people to buy and exchange goods and services amongst themselves through private contracts. You could call it capitalism if you want. I just call it freedom. You can call it liberty. But Barry Ho intends to fix freedom. The Obama administration, according to an International Herald story, will call for increased oversight of executive pay at all banks, Wall Street firms, and possibly other companies as part of a sweeping plan to overhaul financial regulation. That's right, all banks, all Wall Street firms, and possibly other companies are going to be told by the central government how much they can pay their executives. The administration, according to the International Herald, could seek to put the changes into effect through regulation rather than through legislation. Now, I'm not a big fan of regulation or legislation, but let's just say it like it is. Barry Ho is going to do what Barry Ho wants to do, and he's going to do it through the back door if he has to. Hey, that almost rhymed. I could be a rapper. Hey, with the black president and everything, you know, I could learn how to rap. Okay, one proposal that Barry Ho is considering could impose greater requirements on the boards of companies to tie executive compensation more closely to corporate performance, and to take other steps to assure that outsized bonuses are not paid before meeting financial goals. Hey, Barry, that's up to the company. If a company ties executive pay to anything other than profitability in the bottom line, that company's going to disappear. Unless you idiots keep bailing them out, for crying out loud. I mean, let freedom ring. Let the market ring. The market will decide. If these companies are paying people too much, these companies are going to disappear. Because profitability disappears, all of a sudden there's no money to pay the bonuses. The company's bankrupt, it's gone. But you and Nancy keep sticking your fingers into it. I mean, you're just killing me here. I've got an article from a gentleman From the NationalPost.com. I'm not familiar with it, but I figure it's English because the author's name is Terence Corcoran. And only an English newspaper, a British newspaper, would have an author named Terence Corcoran. So let's assume that it's British. He says, Ben Bernanke's Federal Reserve is dropping trillions of fresh paper dollars on the world economy. The President of the United States is cracking jokes on late-night comedy shows. His energy minister is threatening a trade war over carbon emissions. His Treasury Secretary is dithering over a banking reform program amid rising concerns over his competence. And a monumentally dysfunctional U.S. Congress is launching another public jihad against corporations and bankers. Terence asks the question, is this the end of America? Is this the end of America? Well, he says probably not, if only because there are good reasons for optimism. The U.S. economy has pulled out of self-destructive political spirals in the past, spurred on by its business class and corporate leaders, the profit-making and market-creating people who rose above the political turmoil to once again lift the world out of financial crisis. It's happened many times before, Terence tells us, except for once, when it took 20 years to rise out of the Great Depression. And I would remind Terence, and I know that Europeans hate to mention this, but not only did it take 20 years to rise out of the Great Depression, but it also took the greatest world war, the largest global conflict and war in the history of all civilization to rise out of the Great Depression. And folks, let me remind you that before World War II, now they call it the Great Depression. Well, keep in mind that before World War II, they called World War I the Great War. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm Doug McBurney. Where are you? I'm glad to have you here at theweeklyworldview.com. And, you know, speaking of conflicts, wars, and whatnot, I've been hearing about these tea parties going on, hearing about these tea parties that have been touted and mentioned and ballyhooed on a lot of conservative talk radio. And it's interesting to me at what it takes to get conservatives motivated in America. And by conservatives, and I don't want to alienate my entire audience, but I know that slowly but surely I will alienate and offend virtually every person that listens to this broadcast. And I'm just going to go ahead and start right now with those of you who listen to Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity. Can you name some others? Because I draw a blank on these guys. I stopped listening years ago. Hugh Hewitt is another one. Dennis Prager, the entire cadre of conservatives. Now, for an entire generation, the United States government has been allowing the legal slaughter of our children and the legal plunder of the treasury. They've been allowing those who should not live, like murderers and rapists, they've been allowing them to live, and they've been killing those who do not deserve to die. The old, the sick, the unborn. So this has been going on for a generation. Have there been tea parties? Has there been a revolt? No, there has not. Has there been massive marching in the streets and a demand that the government change and a peaceful rally to set things right again? Well, except for a brief period in the late 1980s, early 1990s, when Operation Rescue gathered thousands of people, blocked clinics, and actually prevented the government from inflicting their policy of child killing upon the culture at large, except for that brief blip in history, conservatives in general have sat back and allowed their nation, their heritage, and their culture to be frittered away by incompetent buffoons. By the forces of darkness, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. But when you start messing with the conservatives' pocketbook, look out. And maybe it's just human nature. Maybe I just have to accept that. You know, we can accept bloodshed. We can accept the imprisonment and the killing of the innocent. We can accept, for some reason, a disrespect and a casting aside of our Constitution, of our heritage, of our language. But when you start messing with our cash, that's when we really get upset. So I pulled this story down about this Tea Party in Orlando. More than 4,000 people attended the Orlando Tea Party, a conservative rally aimed at expressing discontent with Washington. Several speakers addressed the crowd, estimated to be over 4,000 people, on a variety of topics, including gun rights, freedom of speech, the dangers of communism, and most prevalently, the economy, especially Barry Ho's administration's bailout plan. And this was all kind of put together on the internet and by talk radio type folks. And I'm wondering to myself, what are you people doing at this tea party? I mean, you're hearing some speeches and maybe you're drinking tea. But what is this all about? Is this what the conservative movement has come to? The government kills our children, steals our property, adulterates our language, doesn't respect our borders. And what do? We go to the park on Saturday, have some speeches, and drink tea. I mean, that's not what the original Tea Party was about. But this is where we've come. I mean, it's all just another form of entertainment or something. And I just, I'm for a more forceful insistence that these people stop killing, stop stealing, stop lying, and stop legalizing adultery and other pernicious and destructive behaviors. I'm for a more forceful assertion of that. Now, I'm not for revolution and I'm not for rebellion, but I'm not for sitting around drinking tea and listening to Rush Limbaugh give a speech about whatever it is he talks about these days. Listen to this, folks. This is from WorldNet Daily. If you want to hear how serious it is, some teenagers in rural America are now self-inducing abortions with chemicals intended to abort livestock. Yeah. Yeah, there's a drug that farmers use to abort unintended pregnancies among their livestock to control the population of their livestock. Well, now teenage girls are apparently able to get a hold of this drug. And according to the American Life League, these girls are drinking the poison and risking death rather than burying their children. That's according to Judy Brown over at American Life League. The drug is kept on farms for the management of livestock, as I said. And they're being ingested orally by young girls in large quantities in order to induce an abortion. Now, both Wisconsin and the National Veterinary Associations have acknowledged the problem. This is happening, ladies and gentlemen. According to the American Animal Hospital Association warning, its state officials in Wisconsin their state officials in Wisconsin have contacted district school nurses who have verified that they've received reports that young girls are using a chemical abortifacient, basically drinking a veterinary drug in order to abort their own children. What is happening to our children? I mean, forget about the bailout of the banks, ladies and gentlemen. We need a bailout of our teenagers. And it needs to be a spiritual bailout. And it needs to be led by you and I, and we need to start right now. We need to start with our own families. Prevent abortion in your own family, and you will gain the courage to go out amongst the culture and educate those who are so ignorant that they would strangle off and kill their own prodigy and destroy our nation and destroy Western civilization. Dateline Wellington, New Zealand, from the Associated Press, a woman who secretly gave birth on a flight from Samoa to New Zealand may face criminal charges after her baby was found alive in the plane's bathroom. Did you catch that? She may face criminal charges. Yeah, Police are inquiring into the alleged abandonment of the child by the mother after the flight landed in New Zealand last week. A police communications manager said, quote, A likelihood of this investigation is a criminal prosecution. So we have a woman who delivered a baby on a plane and left it there to die. And what is the response of the police and the authorities there in New Zealand, which is a part of the Western world, part of the Western family, part of Western civilization? That's what you and I are part of, ladies and gentlemen, at least for the moment. Well, their response is, we may press charges here. There may have been a crime committed here. But they're confused and they don't really know, because in many other circumstances, killing the baby is just fine. She just didn't go through the proper channels. So they're a little confused. There may or may not be criminal charges against a woman abandoning a child, leaving it to die in a toilet on an airplane. There may be criminal charges, which leaves open the possibility that there may not. Meanwhile, while all this is going on, ladies and gentlemen, and everybody's freaking out about the AIG bonuses, well, North Korea is getting ready to launch their rocket. They've closed the air routes in their airspace from April 4th through the 8th for a scheduled rocket launch. Yep, Kim Dong-il's regime has said that it intends to launch a satellite into orbit as part of a peaceful space project. The U.S. and South Korea have warned against the action, saying it would violate a United Nations resolution, and that evidence suggests North Korea is instead planning to test a ballistic long-range missile capable of reaching Alaska. So what interests me, ladies and gentlemen, is we have young people who are killing their children, killing themselves, completely lost, and our government is paying attention to a bunch of thieves who simply outclassed them and stole their money, which they stole from us. Meanwhile, we have real enemies and real problems that are coming to the fore. Dateline Moscow. Russian news agency cited a top defense official Wednesday as confirming that a contract to sell powerful air defense missiles to Iran was signed 2 years ago. Russian officials have consistently denied claims that the country already has provided some of the missiles to Iran. So we've got Russian missiles going to Iran, we've got the Koreans about to launch, and we've got our young people who are suicidal. And we're worried about who took who in the money that they stole from us and that they gave to AIG, and now they're saying AIG can't give it to their people because, hey, we're the ones who stole the money, we should be able to decide where it goes. Meanwhile, our culture is collapsing, ladies and gentlemen. But let's not end on a bummer note, okay? Let's not end on a down note. I don't want to do the YouTube. Do I want to do it? YouTube recently opened their, whatever it is they do there, their website to politicians. And Nancy Pelosi submitted her post, her first post to YouTube. She's the Speaker of the House, for crying out loud. It's a one-minute long video in which Mrs. Pelosi showed footage of her life behind the scenes in the Capitol building through the eyes of two pet cats. That's right. Tell me this woman is not insane, but I tell you what, we wouldn't want to see her life through her eyes, because she blinks so much we'd be bumping into stuff. We wouldn't know what's going around. We wouldn't even know what's going on. Now, here's an interesting story from the Associated Press. U.S. police are using gunfire detection systems. That's right. Spot Shotter, which is a technology founded in 1996 by a San Francisco Bay engineer, uses coffee can size sensors that are placed on telephone poles and roofs, and they're linked to a central computer, and the system can pinpoint shots with the help of a global positioning system navigation, and it alerts police dispatchers and officers within seconds when shots have been fired. Where are they using it? Is it Baghdad? No, is it Kabul? No, it's East Palo Alto, California. They're the first city that is completely wired with Spot Shotter. Now, you know that we're generally against soccer. Dateline Buenos Aires. An 85-year-old woman and a 55-year-old man were shot when fans fought among themselves before their soccer team's match. The woman was hit in the leg, while the man suffered a serious head injury after he was also shot. And you've just got to ask yourself, was the head injury due to him being shot, Or did he suffer the head injury after he was shot? Because they're soccer fans. Getting shot is no reason to stop the fight. They keep kicking you while you're down. All right, that's the end of the show. Now the music's going to run out, but I'm going to keep going because I'm going a little long. I want to thank my friends at Personhood USA. I want to thank the folks over at KGOV.com. I want to thank the folks at Denver Bible Church for all the support they give the broadcast. And I want to thank my other brother, Daryl, for the help he's given me here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week, folks. By the way, the show typically goes up sometime Sunday night. Due to security purposes, I can't tell you exactly when, but it usually goes up sometime Sunday night. And you feel free to download it, pass it on to your friends. And until next week, may the grace of our Lord and His peace be upon you.